just over the course of this past week, we've really had confirmation that central banks are moving to a more aggressive stance. And we saw it with the Fed's meeting, so the FOMC meeting, where the Fed delivered a 75 basis point interest rate hike last week, taking their Fed funds rate to 1.75% from 1%. And there's every indication that they're going to be pumping those rates up pretty fast in the near term. The reason for that is the what every central bank is talking about now, which is that in a supply-constrained world, which has been made worse, obviously, by the war in Ukraine and by the COVID response in China, with demand running still so high in many economies, they have no choice. They have to destroy demand. They have to bring it back towards the constraint of supply. And so that does imply that, you know, they've still got a bit of work in front of them, and their choice at the moment, and they've really moved this way over the last few weeks, is hit it hard early with some pretty big interest rate increases. Maybe they get a chance to tone that back as they go further down the track. And it was interesting that the Fed's meeting, when we're looking at where the Fed governors now expect their funds rate to be, over the 1 year, 2 year and longer term time frame. Over the next 1 year, they expect that current 1.75% to get up to around 3.8%. And over 2 years, they expect it will start to come off the top, come back to 3.4. And over the long term, they now expect the Fed funds rate to settle at 2.5%, which is what they consider to be their neutral rate over time. So that's pretty strong. That's pretty high in terms of the interest rate structure, where they expect things to be. Also, just some of the data that came out last week confirming why, you know, the Fed has to do this. You know, we've still got a lot of inflation pressure coming through. We had the producer prices for the month of May came out, and the most recent month was 0.8%. That did bring back the annual rate from 10.9% to 10.8%, but obviously that's still very, very high pressure in the pipeline. And even taking out, you know, the getting down ex-food and energy, and food and energy are really, really driving inflation, you're still running at 8.3% year on year for the core PPI. So there's a lot of inflation, notwithstanding the areas which are subject to large one-offs. There are some signs that we're starting to see the economy, that the edge just starting to fade back a bit. So we had some leading indicators came out last week, both the Empire State Survey and also the Philadelphia Fed Survey. Respondents are starting to respond to this more aggressive tightening of monetary policy that lies ahead. And in the case of the Empire State Survey, it's still got a negative sign on the front of it. It was actually minus 11.6 going back the month before. There was some hope that might bounce a little bit into positive territory again. It didn't. It's still a negative sign on the front at minus 1.2. And the Philadelphia Fed Survey, which was at plus 2.6 going back to May, in June slipped into negative territory at minus 3.3. There's also indications that the most interest rate sensitive part of the US economy is starting to slip. And we had May housing starts and May housing permits came out. Housing starts, they fell by 14.4%. That was after a 5.5% increase the month before, so quite a bit of slippage there. And housing permits were down 7% month on month after being down 3%. So at the leading edge, we're starting to see the housing pressure coming through. Remembering, of course, that you know, it's not a variable rate market for housing in the US. It's a very long-term fixed rate market. But having said that, those long-term fixed rate mortgages are now well above 5%. So there's quite a bit of pressure which has run through there. In terms of the intermediate indicators out the US, there's also the first signs of a little bit of softness there. We had May retail sales came out after rising 0.7% the month before on revision. It fell by 0.3% for the most recent month. But core retail sales, taking out what people had to spend on things like food and energy, they still rose by 0.5% after a 0.4% increase the month before. This week in the US, we're back to, there's not a lot of data coming out this week, so we do get things like existing home sales, which are going to be quite soft. They come out on Tuesday. We get the latest Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey. It's actually a final version of that for the month of June. That did have a lot of slippage, down to 50.2, so it's probably going to be about that for the final reading of that. And we also get some manufacturing and services sector PMIs, which are still holding up okay in the 50s, so there'll be June readings that come out later on. But what we're really watching and listening for is Fed Chairman Powell, and he testifies to the House Economic Committee, both in Congress and the Senate, that comes up on both Wednesday and Thursday. And he's probably going to give chapter and verse of what the Fed's doing at the moment, which is really battening down demand. And, of course, when central banks get into this business of trying to contain demands, the risk of policy error is very, very high. And that's why the fears of recession down the track are building. And we're still going to see that swirling, I think. And I don't think Powell's testimony is really going to help markets much when we get through to the middle of this week. Moving briefly to China, and they're sort of improving a little bit there. The only problem is, of course, their approach to Omicron. You can't contain Omicron by locking people down. It's way, way too infectious. And the latest variations, if they get up there, the BA5, I think, is the latest variant, the one that's going through Australia at the moment, is hugely more infectious even than the original Omicron, and can affect very quickly people who've already had the Omicron variant. China's view is, well, you keep locking people down, where they try to open things up a little bit, they have to find they're having to backtrack and go back to try and lock down. So we still have this issue in China. Having said that, we've got a little bit of improvement running through some of their monthly readings. We had May fixed asset investment spending. That one came back a little bit, 6.2% year-on-year from 6.8%. But industrial production actually lifted a little from minus 2.9% year-on-year going back to April, to plus 0.7% in May. And retail sales, which has been really soft in China, down 11.1% year-on-year, going back to April. That moderated to minus 6.7%. Still down, but not quite as bad. The other interesting one in China is probably house prices. For the first time, house prices are now falling year-on-year in China. Go back a year, they were rising at over 11% year-on-year. By the time we got through to April, that was up only 0.7% year-on-year. The May figure is now down 0.1% year-on-year. So we're starting to see that asset prices really under a lot of pressure in China. This week in China, we get the People's Bank of China. They're meeting one of the rare central banks that might actually be able to ease things a little. Their current cash rate's at 3.7%. They may touch the reserve ratio requirement as well. So just watching that, the Chinese have been moving towards easier policy conditions to try and offset the softness which is running through their economy. Moving to Australia, we had some sentiment surveys last week and also labour market data. And what the data shows is that the Reserve Bank here has got quite a job. It's going to try and temper demand to try and get it underneath the growth in supply. Supply constraints, we know, are prevalent at the moment, and our demand is running well ahead of that. And it's still there in some of these surveys. So we had the May NAB business survey. In terms of business conditions, this is a legacy of all the money that's pumped into the economy going through the pandemic, and also, of course, of very, very high commodity prices. But when businesses are talking about where they are currently, their profitability and these sorts of things, still very, very strong responses. So we got business conditions. It was plus 19. It only came back a little to plus 16. That's still a well above long-term trend. when you talk about confidence, even that's still holding up pretty well. So it was at plus 10, going back to April, came back to plus 6. Come to consumer sentiment, though, and that's still very, very soft. We had Westpac consumer sentiment, and it fell back in May by 5.6%. It fell another 4.5% in June. And, of course, this is getting into the era where central banks are starting to push interest rates up. So it's not surprising that you're seeing that softness starting to come through there. But what we're finding, too, is that what they say in terms of sentiment is still not being reflected yet in the way in which they're spending. The spending numbers are still coming through pretty well. And that probably comes back to our over-full employment now, where you know, we had the labour force data came out, and stunningly strong, stunningly good in many ways, but that's now bad in the current environment because it implies the labour market is very tight. So we had May employment. The market expected employment to rise by 25,000. It rose by 60,600. And of that, full-time employment was 69,400. The participation rate, people are just clattering back into the workforce and the labour market is really strained to get these people back in. So the participation rate's gone to a new record high of 66.7% from 66.4%. That kept the unemployment rate at 3.9%, very, very low. The underemployment rate, too, is down at 6.1%. That's the lowest we've seen in well over 20 years. So we've got a very, very overfull employment market. And, of course, last week we also had Fair Work Australia came out. And this is one of the problems you have at this time. Yes, it's fair that very low, or the minimum wage should go up, but the problem is it's a disaster in terms of adding to a wage inflation impulse when we've already got strong demand pull for inflation. So the minimum wage lifted by 5.2%, that goes through to about 400,000 workers automatically from July the 1st. And other awards which hang off the minimum wage were also lifted by 4.6%. The problem is, remember that the Reserve Bank's inflation target is 2 to 3%. That's where you want to get back to at some point in the future. When you're passing through these sorts of wage increases, and that then becomes obviously a bit of a benchmark. Everybody else is looking for wage increases at the moment. This means the task for the Reserve Bank's getting harder and harder all the time. And we heard from the Reserve Bank governor. He gave an interview on TV last week, and he's now lifted even their latest inflation forecast and says he now expects it's going to run up around about 7% by the time we get to the end of this year. So he's giving strong indications. They've got a lot of work ahead of them to get on top of this inflation problem now. He's a very late convert to what has become a general trend amongst central bankers, which is we left things too long. We allowed demand to run ahead of supply for too long, and now we've got one hell of a problem to try and drag demand down towards supply and get on top of this inflation problem. This is basically the tenor of the remarks, which is starting to come through from many central bankers. So this week we have the RBA governor speaking again, both on Tuesday and Friday. On Tuesday he's giving a talk about monetary policy and the economy, and on Friday he's talking international conference in Geneva. He's going to be reinforcing the new message, which is that they have some work ahead of them to get inflation down. That will also come through in the minutes of the last RBA meeting. That comes out on Tuesday. So that was the meeting that lifted our cash rate by 50 basis points. Moving across to Europe, and I'll start with the Bank of England first, because they went against the trend of, you know, supersized interest rate increases. They have done some before. This was their fifth interest rate increase in the current cycle, and they lifted their base rate by 25 basis points to 1.25%. The problem for England at the moment is, or for the UK, is that they are facing not only high inflation, but also a growing risk of recession. And so it's a real two-edged sword. And it's going to be problematic because over this past week in the UK, transport workers in the UK have put in a pay claim for over 11% for a pay increase. Their inflation rate's already over 9%. I'd put money on it that Britain, of major economies, is going to be the first one to show a double-digit inflation increase before we go very much further. So the Bank of England is truly between a rock and a hard place with the way in which it will be trying to organise policy. In Europe itself, we had the latest CPI came out in May. It lifted again to 8.1% year-on-year from 7.4% and is racing ahead. The ECB, its next meeting, will probably have to lift interest rates, even though it sees a very great risk of recession on the track. So we have these pressure points building there too. The data that came out is not particularly attractive. We had the ZEW Economic Sentiment Survey for the month of June, well and truly in negative territory, minus 28 most recent months and minus 59.5 the previous month. And industrial production, even back in April, was starting to fade. We had minus 2% industrial production growth for 1 month. So the beginnings of that downturn, if anything, starting to show in Europe, but still caught with this problem of very, very high inflation. Europe this week will be confidence data soft, -20.8, -21.1. And also their manufacturing and services PMIs. And these, paradoxically, are the things which are holding up around the world still. You know, a lot of companies are trying to provide the supply. They're really struggling because demand is still running well ahead of very constrained supply for the time being. So, yeah, it's still going to be a very, very problematic week in some ways. I think even though we haven't got a lot of major data or meetings by central banks, what we do have is an awful lot of commentary coming from some very senior central bankers. And the ones which obviously the market's going to focus on very, very strongly, Jerome Powell on Wednesday and Thursday in the United States,